Hi everyone, welcome to North and South Pods. Following on in our fine history tradition, we've got Dan Proctor on today, who is a subject development lead for Teach First. I'm going to let him introduce himself in a moment, but I was put on to Dan by Colin McCormick, who was on a few weeks ago talking about transatlantic slavery and its links with Liverpool. I'm a former history teacher. I love history. I'm a right boring so-and-so these history books. But we're going to touch a topic today which is quite unusual, but I think very, very important and essential. I'll let Dan introduce himself in a minute and introduce the topic. So, Dan, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Tim. Yeah, it's nice and sunny in Liverpool. I've got a bit of rain coming in later in the week though, which is a bit unfortunate.
Is that true?
I think so. From Saturday, ironically. Well, from Sunday, yeah.
All right.
So
Well, I can still go
it's
out
just
on Friday, then won't be sun.
yeah.
No worries. So, Dan, do you want to start by telling us a little about yourself and how you got interested in environmental history, which I believe environment was a word first used by Shakespeare. It never existed before Shakespeare. He kind of made it up. I don't know how true that is. So, what is environmental history? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I didn't know that about Shakespeare. So I was a teacher of history for 14 years, in a mixed comprehensive in St. Helens, and now I work for Teach First. I'm a subject development lead, so I train teachers now. So and I was a long-suffering head of department as well. So I do empathise with you with the teachers. And yourself, Tim. Like in terms of environmental history, like a bit of background on me, I was brought up in Chorley, which is in Lancashire. It's an old industrial town. Every holiday that I had was a camping holiday around England or Wales. And you know, it's only now you kind of appreciate your exposure to those national parks and the natural environment. Because at the time it seemed a bit dull and all your mates were going on holiday abroad. But yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful for that opportunity to see the best nature that Britain's got to offer. Then putting two and two together, reflecting on my job as a teacher of history and that kind of upbringing, and also reading Teaching History 195, which is the I'm not sure if you read it, the Historical Association Teaching History. It's completely dedicated to teaching history and the environment. Putting all that together, it really made me sit down and reflect. You know, I've spent all that time teaching history of people and events and looking through a political, economic, and social lens, when really the environment sits behind it all, and in some cases contributes to events, it changes events, it causes events as well, in the parts of history that we teach. And really, environmental history is it's about the way that we've interacted with the natural world over time. And I think as history teachers, we don't need to change where we're putting the camera in our curriculums. We just kind of need to zoom out a little bit to include that environmental aspect within it.
Yeah, I think it's very important because although people say that environment has only really figured as a global issue since I think the 50s when they started to notice the carbon dioxide rates going up globally and making those links. I think, you look at the Romantic movement, the way it emerged out of almost a rejection of the cities and the dark satanic mills, if you like, of the Industrial Revolution. But I think that I myself remember going on holidays when I was a kid, very fortunate, went on holidays around England, being abroad. And there is a time in your life when you really start to appreciate nature and its beauty. And looking back, you appreciate those holidays even more because they call it like, is it biophilia? Like just having 5 minutes exposure to nature every day can like make a real difference going out in the light and being a part of nature, the fractals, the beauty of nature, the way it fits into your mind. But of course, it's becoming more of a global issue, but it's also a very, very personal issue because I remember during lockdown, I went to see Everton during lockdown when it reopened, and I was walking down those concrete streets near the Everton ground in quite a deprived area, and I thought, I wouldn't have liked to have spent lockdown here with no exposure to nature or environment because it's absolutely essential to our lives, isn't it? And as you've said, with history, it's not saying like, oh, we shouldn't study the history that we study. It's just about zooming out and factoring in those environmental factors as well. One of the things me and Colin discussed, and I discussed with other ex-teachers, I'm no longer in the game. And I sympathise as a head of department when you're trying to write schemes of work, because I did it myself, and programmes of study, is trying to fit everything in. But putting environment at the core of everything, it's about basic well-being as well, isn't it? And understanding that we shouldn't take these things for granted because we're basically a part of it and it's essential to us. Do you think it's something that's easy to get into schools at the moment? I mean, you get a lot of like forest schools now, don't you? And stuff like that going on. But do you find that sometimes it might be difficult to get this topic into schools because of just the workload of schools? Have you got any comments on that?
No, I don't think so. No, because like I said, like I've already mentioned, I think we already teach it. And I know you mentioned 1950s people starting to take notice of the carbon emissions in the air. But like, if we take a topic, for example, that is on every history curriculum, like for example, the Industrial Revolution, we can look at sources. And there's one that I use in one of my lessons from 1866 from a select committee that was set up by the government to look at coal mining, who acknowledged there was an increase in carbon in the air that was having a detrimental environmental impact. And they actually said in the report that we don't know what these consequences will be in the future, but they knew they were going to be negative. And that was way back in 1866. We can zoom out, we can include sources like that in what we're teaching, but also different types of sources we can bring into lessons. So instead of, we often use written records, we use pictorial records, caricatures, paintings. We can bring in ice core data to look at. For example, the ice core data in Greenland shows there was an increase of lead in the atmosphere from when the Romans were going through from periods of economic prosperity where they were producing more, and also a decrease when there was wars and plagues and famine. And you can use that data to correlate with what was going on in the Roman Empire at the time. So you can also, the advantage of it is widening the amount of sources that we use. And another example would be tree ring data as well. And you see the tree rings, they get narrower over during the Little Ice Age in the medieval period, because there's less growth in those trees. And if you think about what we already teach in the medieval period, we teach about the Black Death. If you can frame the Little Ice Age, if you can teach Little Ice Age before you teach the medieval topic, you're giving students that not that knowledge of the climate and a more environmental awareness when you're teaching the topic. So for example, it enhances the students' knowledge of the Black Death and the increased mortality rate, because these people didn't have the greatest food supply because the harvests were affected by the Little Ice Age. They had weaker immune systems, you have a higher mortality rate. Also, you can tie it into the witch craze, the persecution of witches ties into the bad harvests as well. And also social unrest as well, because of the bad harvest, for example, in Elizabethan England, you had a inflation, which then leads to social unrest, not just in Britain, but it correlates across Europe as well. So giving students that awareness of the climatic conditions within topics that we already teach, it is quite easy to put on, if I'm going to be honest with you. It's just a small tweak, but it enhances the students' awareness of the env of environmental conditions and the impact the environment and the natural world has on human behavior and events and key events and people.
It's
So.
fascinating, isn't it? I mean, the Middle Ages, you've got the Little Ice Age, the Black Death, obviously the plague, which came back in the 1500s as well. We've seen recently with the COVID pandemic, like the increase in conspiracy theories, kind of like anti-science stuff, economic impact, economic decline. I mean, it's quite an interesting comparison to make to modern things, even the pushback against like climate change and climate change denial being part of all this. If you look after the like in the UK after the English Civil War, all these like new religions came up with all these ideas, etc. And the way that during the Black Death people are trying to explain things, it's still happening now, but with social media and the internet enhancing it even more. But the environment's a big issue. It's a big culture war issue at the moment. But there's no doubt, and anyone can say it, that the environment is where we live. It's where we spend our time. This idea that it's like external to us, that kind of Cartesian way of looking at it, the external world is different. We're part of it. And you get these movements like environmentalism, deep ecology, like holism, like James Lovelock's Gaia theory, and people like Fritjof Capra, who I've read books by them, which are fantastic, showing the interconnectedness of everything. And this idea of like artificial division and even interdisciplinary division, life is far more complex and interconnected than that. And I think that environment I think it filters into everything, basically, doesn't it? Including history. But some fascinating examples you've just given there of how environment has been central, even to times before it when you thought you couldn't really measure or understand these
Well,
things.
yeah, I mean, to jump in on your point there, there's a great opportunity here as well for history teachers to really, really zoom out and go way back in history. And you look at the first art, the earliest artifact, human artifact found in Britain is the Robin Hood cave horse, 2,500 years ago, a horse etched on a piece of rib bone. And it's interesting that it depicts a horse. And you mentioned about how humans, we used to see ourselves as part of the natural environment, and we've kind of now moved away from that to see ourselves as apart from the natural environment. And there's a really good opportunity here for history teachers to really tell that story. Because, I mean, it's really important that students and the next generation, not just our students, history students, but the next generation do understand this. And we can facilitate that as history teachers. And there's a quote that F Peter Frankopan makes in The Earth Transformed. And he says the best way to address complex problems is to look back into the past, as this helps provide context and perspective for current and future challenges. And I think that's quite pertinent as well to, what we're saying here and what opportunities really lie ahead for history teachers as well when they're teaching environmental history and why we should do it.
I believe you've created a set of lessons to help teachers weave environmental history into what they're already teaching. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so a few months ago, me and Colin McCormick, your friend who we spoke about in the Transatlantic Slave Trade book in Liverpool, we sat down and we got a timeline of the Key Stage 3 curriculum, and a curriculum map together, and we thought, like, what can slot really well into the curriculum? Where can we weave in environmental history into the curriculum as a green thread? And these aren't just add-on lessons; they would enhance the curriculum. And we've already talked about the Little Ice Age, so you can teach the Little Ice Age before you move into the medieval topic. So there's a lesson on the Little Ice Age. And the thing is about each one of these individual lessons that intersects so well with the disciplinary skills within history. So with the Little Ice Age lesson, we focused on conse well, I sorry, I've focused on consequences, and we've looked at economic consequences, the harvests, political consequences, social consequences. So it ties in really well to a history curriculum, but it looms so large, that topic, over the entire medieval period, that it, like I mentioned before, it enhances students' knowledge and awareness of what was going on in that period. Also, I've created a lesson which I'd like to mention. There are other lessons, but I just want to go into one right now called How Far Did the Humble Potato Change the World? And that's actually taken from a quote that Peter Frankopan makes in The Earth Transformed. He does say, the potato changed the world, the humble potato, he calls it. And I really like that, the humble potato, because it's anything but when you look at the impact that it's had through time. And that we all teach empire, we all teach colonization, and in many Key Stage 3s, we also teach the Age of Exploration. And this little story of the potato could really do well to start the whole topic on empire or on the Age of Exploration, because you're looking at colonialism and you're looking at the environmental impact of colonialism just through that little story of the potato. And if anyone is, little stories are a really good way in to teach about the environment within topics we already teach. And if anyone, is interested in another little story, Amitav Ghosh has written a great book called The Nutmeg's Curse on the history of the nutmeg. And that little nutmeg tells such an in-depth history of colonization, of, the British colonization, Dutch colonization as well in the Banda Islands in Indonesia. So yeah, there is a lesson there that's good to go on the humble potato. There's a lesson on the Little Ice Age. I've also done a lesson on the impact of World War One on the landscape. I know we often teach life in trenches, but we kind of neglect the environmental impact that World War One had. You're thinking about deforestation, building the trenches. The mud in Passchendaele is something that we often go into. But you just have to go into the Imperial War Museum in London and look at John Nash's paintings, and you see, the landscape has been wrecked completely. But the other thing is, when you teach environmental histories, is trying to not have this doom narrative that we've really condemned the earth. And there's a really good opportunity there when you're teaching World War One to reframe it in a positive way when you're looking at the rebuilding of Ypres. The poppy is a symbol of remembrance, but it's also a symbol of resurgence in the environment and hope. as well. So trying where we can as history teachers to put a positive spin on events is really important. And World War One does give us that opportunity there as well to look at. So yeah, there is a series of lessons. I think there's six lessons there, but I'm sure we can tag on the website to this podcast. If that's okay. If anyone wants to have a look at it, just click on lessons and resources. There's stuff that's good to go there. And I mentioned about 1866 Industrial Revolution, the source there. That's in a story source scholarship that I've done on the Industrial Revolution. And also, I've done a lesson on the consequences of the Industrial Revolution. Again, we all teach that. We always look at the political, economic, and social consequences. But this specific lesson digs into those consequences we teach anyway, always, but also environmental consequences. So that's the idea with weaving it in. It's not wholesale change to the curriculum. We already teach it. It's just zooming that camera out and like trying to plot into your curriculum. I'm going to call it a green thread, where you can really highlight the environmental issues that we touch upon, but we don't necessarily dig into in as much detail as we can.
That's really good. As you say, we'll include the website and any links in the podcast notes. But I mean, it ties into globalization, empire, also war. One of the like you look at, say, Japan at the start of World War II. They didn't have much crop diversity. They wanted more land. We were talking to Colin about this, and it was a case of like Colin was saying, "Oh, the slave trade. It's good for looking at like globalization. It's good for looking at empire, the Industrial Revolution. There's so many different threads." And environment, I think that's a similar kind of thing, isn't it? It just dictates everything because that's where we are. Like the country you are born in, the history of its relationship with the environment. So, for example, the United States with its resources didn't really need to have a formal land empire because it kind of had it all there. Do you know what I mean? I was listening to an interesting debate about this the other night, how Britain needed to go further afield to get what it needed. Whereas the United States, it was very much a case of it's already here. It's just how we then fit into the world and those kinds of debates. But environment's massive, isn't it?
Jump in there as well. In Colin's book, I've included a chapter on environmental impact of the plantation system. And when you think about the amount of plantations in the Deep South, and if you were to put them all back to back next to each other, they'd cover the entire state of Georgia. And when you think about the environmental impact that plantation systems had, you're thinking about the deforestation, the continual planting of crops like tobacco and cotton, and the soil erosion that that leads to, and the habitat destruction. It also digs into a little bit of what wildlife was lost because of the transatlantic slave trade, because of the plantation system. And you're touching on, ecosystems there as well. And that's a chapter that is included in Colin's book. And it just is an example that it can go anywhere. You can consider the environmental impact of pretty much anything that we teach.
Fascinating. Now, what would you say to a history teacher who's curious but unsure where to start? I mean, we've got those links. Would you recommend we have a little look at them or anything else that you'd want to say to them?
So definitely have a look at them. Yeah, I'd recommend that you look at Kate Hawkey. She's a luminary in this area. She's written a book called History and the Climate Crisis. That's free to access online. I'd start there. But if you've got less time, listen to the podcast that she's done with Carmel Bones on Reteach. And if you've got a little bit more time, have a look at Teaching History 195. Every single article within that publication is really valuable, especially the first one written by Michael Riley and Alison Kitson. And also, UCL have done a short course for history teachers who want to learn a bit more about environmentalism and sustainability and how to weave and how to get that into your curriculum. And I know Michael Riley's got the keynote at HA, and he's going to be talking about this at the
That's
HA
the Historical
conference in,
Association and
yeah, the HIT.
University College London you've mentioned there, isn't it? No, it's fascinating stuff, and it's very much a modern issue as well, and an increasingly important issue. But I remember watching Al Gore's documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, 20 years ago, and I don't know if you know, but the opening scene, it's chosen by a river. It's just birds are singing, it's beautiful. And he said, when you come to places like this, you often think, I forgot about this. And I was talking to a guy who cycles. I cycle a little bit. I haven't been out for a few months. But when I go cycling through the Green Belt up to Ormskirk or to Southport, I always think to myself, I wish I could do this more often. And it is easily forgotten and it is easily overlooked. And I'm hearing increasingly more and more about this kind of holistic approach to education and this idea of like separate subjects. And I know that there's an ongoing debate, particularly with relevance to young people, you know, vocational stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think that this is a really important issue. And it's good that there's more and more literature coming out about this issue because it kind of underpins everything, doesn't it? And people, th history tends to move through these little paradigms and how environment can be overlooked. I heard recently about, you know, that someone told me the biggest polluter globally was the US military, which kind of shocked me, but didn't shock me at the same time. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I've never really considered that. We have all these kind of things going on, but no one ever says, wait there, what are the wider implications and consequences and effects of what we're doing and how we're doing them. And of course, we've got the big threat of nuclear war hanging over us, which is a very real and present danger to our environment. And also, not a direct war, but just human error. Some of the close calls we've had, you know, the fact that we haven't had one yet is quite a miracle, really, if you look at how close we've come. Have you got anything else you want to add?
Yeah, so I mean, really, to strip it down, to strip down what you're saying, I think within history, we've got the question between do we go for profit or saving the environment? And, you know, we see those questions being raised right now with the increasing tariffs. You know, do we, with the steel industry, with the reopening of coal mines, what we're kind of at a crossroads once again. You know, it's just short-term gains over a planet which is survivable for human beings. And this question repeats and repeats itself again and again and again. And for history teachers, like I said, I keep mentioning about weaving it in, it's small tweaks. And one little tweak that I did make to the Industrial Revolution topic was to reframe the inquiry question. Did the Industrial Revolution help people more than it harmed the environment? And I think that's a really good inquiry question to go down because you're still teaching the original stuff that you'd be teaching. But pupils at the back of the mind are always thinking about the environment. And when you start to introduce those new sources, you know, John Ruskin's lectures, where he does talk about the environmental impact of the Industrial Revolution and urbanization, they're starting to think more environmentally. And I think if they can do that in history, they can do that in geography, they can do that in science, and they can do it in more and more topics. And Becky Francis's interim report on the curriculum as well, which has just come out, she highlights that we've got to start doing this as educators. If we can start getting students to think more and more about that, then you know that's surely got to be a good thing for the next generation to have that in mind when they've got these questions.
Absolutely. And I think, again, I think it was the early noughties, the Stern report came out saying the consequences of not addressing the environmental issue would cost us three times more in the long term. We've also got the, since the late noughties, it was said like, oh, the costs are going green, we can't sustain it. The technological developments we've had since then mean it is far more sustainable because there's been more of a focus on it. But there's been a lot of pushback. And as you say, the human project. You talk about the Industrial Revolution. I always remember going to Style Mill, and one of the guides said, if these kind of things didn't happen, that happened in style, technological development, those kids working and being deaf at the age of 14, you're benefiting from that now. And this is how everything links together. And appreciating environment and how human progress itself is at stake. What are the implications, the short-term gains, different perspectives? I just think it's really important, and it's great that there's more of a focus on this. It's also great that you've done that, the slavery book, but also you've got your own focus, and that there's more coming through in the literature as well. But it is very much a live debate, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's only a growing debate as well. I have had, from the work that I've been doing, I've been working with a school in Liverpool, the head department, and he's started to weave in this into his curriculum already. And it's having a really good positive impact on students. He's done a bit of, you know, he's done student voice. It's resoundingly positive from the students, but he also sees it as a really important thing to be doing as well. And that's the feedback that I'm getting from a lot of teachers and at Teach First as well. I've put in a we call them master classes, which is like a little seminar on teaching environmental history and ways in which you can do that. And that also has a positive response. So teachers are generally positive about doing this. People are very much aware that this is something that needs to be done, and hopefully we can see the impact in a few years' time, maybe. But still, I do think back, and I do question my own choices over short-term gain and profit. And I've got two kids, and I find myself living a very environmentally unsustainable life with two children because it's the easiest option. And Zoom, in a grander scale, how much impact can we have? I mean, I know I'm having a negative. It's a bit. I feel like I'm being a bit negative here, but I feel like any impact we can have in a positive way is a good thing.
And it
But
all
I,
starts with knowing these things, doesn't it?
yeah.
Education. Just wanted to say, Teach First as well, just in case people don't know, it's a teacher training program where teachers go into schools to train, isn't it? It's been going for what, about, is it 15 years now, something like that? Teach First.
So Teach First, so we have lots of partnership schools, and the trainees learn on the job basically, as opposed to your traditional PGCE route. So that's what we do at Teach First, and my job as an SDL is to do subject specific observations, give subject specific feedback, and do subject specific seminars as well to make sure that the subject knowledge is being enhanced alongside the pedagogical knowledge within the classroom.
Yeah, so it's not just that it's what you teach, but also the way you teach it. It's effectiveness in the classroom, as it were, isn't it?
And then through these seminars, which I'm doing specifically on environmental history, it's getting them to consider the traditional curriculum, but ways in which we are moving it forward. And I know history teachers have gone through a big period of change with the diversification and decolonizing of the curriculum, and now the decarbonizing of the curriculum. And that's why I think it's important that we mention about weaving it in, because there is a certain amount of innovation fatigue within the history realm at the moment. But if we can really get the message out there that this is something that we already teach, we just need to, like I've mentioned, widen the scope, zoom out a little bit, and weave in that green thread, then hopefully that would avert some of that innovation fatigue. And as well, with these resources that I'm kind of handing out there on a plate, you can just they do slot in well to curriculum. I've had some questions from history to trainee history teachers saying, "Is this not just geography? Is this not science?" And it is taught in geography, it is taught in science, but it can't be confined to those subjects. Because in geography, they look at more contemporary issues, whereas we should be looking back at historical issues. How have we arrived at this complex problem today? And going back to what Peter Frankopan says, the best way to address complex problems is to look back in the past. We can provide the context, we can provide the perspective for the current challenges, and it's the current challenges that are predominantly taught in geography, and that's why it's so important to do it in history. And there's a real, you can take a cross-curricular approach, and this is a real advantage within teaching environmental history, that we're going to be re-emphasizing what deforestation is. We're going to be re-emphasizing what soil erosion is, what carbon emissions are, and what's already being taught across the school, and strengthening those bonds. So that's another advantage that I would add onto teaching environmental history.
Fantastic. Dan, thank you very much for coming on and not introducing something new or introducing something new to me. I've always been interested in environment and kind of issues of sustainability. And as a history teacher, you haven't always had much chance to discuss that. And I think that that focus, that zoom out and that holistic focus, I think it can only be beneficial. But funnily enough, I saw on the paper the other week there was something about a new natural history GCSE, which is interesting, isn't it?
So yeah, there's a new GCSE in natural history that's been released by OCR, and it was approved by the DfE. And I know it's gone through quite a few, quite a convoluted process to get to this stage. And I know at one point, the Lib Dems were involved in it being pushed onto the agenda. And I'm actually working now with Richard Kerridge to push for an environmental history GCSE spec on OCR as well. That would be a thematic study, because this topic really lends itself to a thematic study. It's over 1,000 years long. There's lots of different topics to unpick within environmental history as well. So that is something that is very much on the agenda, and I think it's really important to get it onto the spec, because as we know, within the history community, what's taught at Key Stage 3 is very much directed by what's taught at GCSE. And in that sense, it's very much of a case of the tail wagging the dog. And if we can get it onto the GCSE spec, that would then facilitate textbooks. It would then facilitate more Key Stage 3s around the country, making this a focus. So I think it's really important that we do get this on the spec, we get it pushed, and we can get textbooks done about environmental history to help teachers even more get it included into the Key Stage 3 curriculum.
Brilliant. And for those who don't know, Key Stage 4 GCSE is the 14 to 16 curriculum, and Key Stage 3 is the start of secondary school in the UK from like 11 to 14, isn't it? And as you say, once the GCSEs kick in, Key Stage 3 tends to change to facilitate that. I know when there's been curricular changes in the past, like you're always waiting for the new textbook, not because you're lazy, but because it really, really helps everyone to set up courses, because you know that there's material, legal material that you can use, isn't it? But thanks for giving up your time and for coming on and sharing such a fascinating new focus, if you like.
Thanks, Tim.
Cheers.